an hour. I notice our consultants are here, however, we advertised the water rate study that your time was 10:30. So even though you're here early, in case there's anyone from the public that wishes to come in to take part and to listen, we're going to wait until 10:30. Your slot of time on your agenda. Okay. Financial review. And there is a motion in the packet. There's our recommendation in the package. Deputy Mayor Hughes.
I move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality adopt the financial report for quarter one of the 2021 fiscal year.
Second by Councilor Keating. You may begin.
Okay. So you want me to review what we just accepted? Okay.
Well, we haven't voted on it.
Oh.
We make the motions to get them on the floor for discussion.
Okay. So I have prepared a report for the first 3 months of the fiscal year, and along with the actual number report, I've also prepared a written report. It has gone to the Audit and Internal Control Committee for review before it came to council. One thing I would like to mention to all of you, this report is a tool for you. My job is to support you and make sure you get the information you need in the way you need to see it. So if there's something missing or something you'd like to see in a different way, you need only give me a dingle and we'll talk about it and I can make changes. This is not a static thing. This will change as we go and maybe certain things become more important than other things on the reports. But you just need to let me know and we'll make sure you get the information you need. So I'll just go over briefly some of the things in the report. The good news, our revenues were higher than budget. We have seen some significant increases in the deed transfer tax because of the red hot real estate market, as you all are aware. And because of that red hot real estate market, I generated some graphs about sales in the quarter, real estate sales. It will be in the last couple of pages of your report. Because I thought it would be of interest to you, talking to people, because I put the sales by month for before COVID, during COVID, and now, and you can see the sales are off the charts. The number of sales has gone up significantly. The total sales in money, we had $15 million worth of sales in May in the region of Queens. Significant, significant. The average sale has gone from $68,000 in May to $153,000. I mean, it's just crazy. If you look at 1920 in April, there was a huge piece of land that was sold in Fort Mattoon for $1.3 million, which is why the average sale in 1920 is so high. Okay? I also broke down the sales by district, and Mayor Norman pointed out that the districts are not exactly your districts, they're assessment districts, so I included a map of the districts in the packet so you know where these are. And I also included a graph for sales dollars over assessment dollars so you can see how much these properties are selling over the assessment value. And I included a table where the actual numbers were. So this is information that I get from Property Service Corporation, so we're allowed to dig deep into this information. I'll be looking at exploring this a little more as time allows, but if there's information, again, that you would find useful on your area, please let me know, and I can see if I can do some digging. One thing I've learned since I've come here is it never assume you can't get an answer, because I've asked a lot of questions, and Mallory can tell you, we have assumed for years that these things couldn't be done, but you just have to ask the right person and you find that yes, indeed, we can do it. So, we all knew that real estate was high, after tax is $100,000, and this year it's $400,000, so that's significant. I added little maps, little graphics of where the clusters of sales are, just because it's another way to illustrate things. That's on page 2 and 3. I wanted to mention the very successful tax sale that we had in April, because we did not have a tax sale last fiscal year. The tax sale, as you all know, took place in the Liverpool Business Development Center, and 52 out of 56 properties were sold, adding $129,344 in unbudgeted tax revenues for the year, so that was also in quarter one. Commercial taxes were also over budget, as the budgeted number included an estimate for appeals. Some of these appeals are still pending, so the future adjustment on this number may occur. Other increases of note, and I think this is very important for council to hear, quarter one prior year, dog licenses were up 38%, but building permits are up 70% in revenue, and planning permits are up 72%. The staff in these departments are out straight. They are very, very busy trying to keep up. And when you're looking at a 70% increase in volume, because I spoke to both the director of planning and our building inspector, and this is volume driven. So I think that's something that you as counselors should be aware of. And then it just added a small note that tax revenue is not the same as taxes collected. However, our finance department does a very good job now of collecting taxes. And when we issued our tax bills on June 1st, we had collected 70% of those taxes by the end of June. So that's really good. Some of the interesting expenditures on the report. One of the things I wanted to mention is, because you are new counselors, expenditures are expressed, as something that I had to learn coming from industry, as a percentage of budget. Therefore, the numbers of their expenses that are at the beginning of the year, such as insurance, will come in at close to 100% of budget, even though you will expect it to be 25%. We don't split the insurance expense over the year, we just expense it all at the beginning of the year. Other things would be like dues for AMAX. We will expense those when we pay them at the beginning of the year. We don't split those up over the year, so that would be higher. The Director of Engineering Public Works and myself reviewed the allocation of vehicle insurance this year. That's why you'll see some of the numbers for vehicles look wonky, because we literally sat down with a list, reviewed it vehicle by vehicle, and corrected the allocations that have been made in the past. And I also had a discussion with our CAO, because there's a formula which I don't understand how it was derived, that applies the liability coverage we have to all of our buildings in a way that I don't understand. So CAO McNeil and I will be sitting down before the end of next year and looking at how we are going to allocate the liability coverage, because it's a significant part of our insurance. So that, for example, the liability coverage for Queen's Place makes sense versus the liability coverage that is assigned to the courthouse. I mean, you would think that Queen's Place would be 4 or 5 times the liability coverage that the courthouse would have. Anyway, we will get there. We will review it. So if you look at section 9, page 4, consultant fees of $2,400 were paid for this quarter under legislative other. That was Mayor Moods. Council Charlton mentioned before. Tax billing expenses at 98% of budget, as bills were used in May for June 1st, issued, sorry. This year the billing was completely in-house using the machine purchased last year. This resulted in the savings of $7,000 for tax bills and $1,000 per quarter for utility bills. No additional staff were needed because we were closed to the public during this time. And the finance staff did an amazing job. I was very proud of them all. Renovations to the administration building are included under common services. Cost of the end of the quarter, approximately $23,000. HVAC repairs were done at a cost of $5,000. We included $30,000 in the budget for this work, so we are still under budget for that. Under conventions and elections, we have our USNM annual dues, just as I mentioned before. Queens County Transit was paid the budgeted $28,000 in quarter one, which is included in other government general services other. That's why these percentages are above 25%. Now if we turn to page 5, section 10, protective services. Fire department paid 50% of their grants in quarter one. So that's why that cost was more than 25%. Tourism and Economic Development includes costs for leasehold improvements for the Liverpool Business Development Center of approximately $50,000. Once final costs are in, tenants will be reimbursing Region of Queens according to the terms of the lease. So the costs are sitting there temporarily until we get the project finalized, and then we'll be turning around and billing the lessees based on their terms of the lease. And the last thing here, I've reallocated the courthouse from protective services to cultural services, because as we all know, there's no real jail in there anymore. Water utility treatment costs. The one thing that really stuck out to me here was a 25% over budget. There was a large order of chemicals made that will last throughout the year in this first quarter. So it's fine. And we'll talk a little bit more about the expenses for the water utility as part of the rate study presentation that will be coming up shortly. So in summary, financial results of quarter one were as expected, with the exception of the significant increase in deed transfer tax and tax sale revenue. We had no way of knowing what a godsend that tax money would be. There was no unbudgeted reserve activity for the quarter. That is very important, because if I'm moving money around from reserves, it should all be approved here in this room at council. Does anybody have any questions on that report?
The taxes that are collected at 70%,
mm-hmm.
is that 30% that's left outstanding part of that that people pay by installments, like through their mortgage, things like that, or?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it doesn't mean, to your point, mean they're not paying.
Right.
It just means that they make
it. It hasn't come yet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
thank you.
Absolutely.
Other questions about Director of Corporate Services? I know this is the first time that many of you have seen the quarterly budget, because it is the first quarter. And for many on, no, we did, we had a, no, this is the first quarter of this year.
This year?
Of this year, right.
Yeah,
and
forward.
It is a different presentation with some good, excellent mandatory notes. Any other questions? Councilor Charlton?
I'd just like to thank Joanne and the finance staff, because this stuff is getting easier to comprehend and just breaking down really easily. And I like the fact that if there's something missing, we're invited to just say what we need. So thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. My pleasure.
Councilor Fancy?
I also like, too, that there was too many things before. It was all put into a bunch and you didn't know what to say. now you're breaking it down so I can see it.
Good.
So I'm not asking that question, because I don't know where it is. It's there. You're making it very
good.
Definable. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm glad, because that means I'm doing my job. Yeah. So thank you.
Any other comments? Before I ask for the motion, I guess I'll just make one comment. And while it's great to have all that e-transfer money and to see all these sales, as elected people, we are all hearing about the hardships of our residents and the fact that their homes are being sold, especially people who are renting.
Mm-hmm.
And so while it's a good financial boost for the Region of Queens, these sales are displacing a fair number of people within our community. And on that note, I will ask for a vote on the question.
Yeah.
All those in favor of accepting the quarterly report, contrary, passed. We have about 14 minutes remaining, and I am uncertain if that is going to be time enough for explanation of the audited financial statements. Or we could, with permission of council,
how about if we just do 11:13?
Yeah.
Which should be pretty quick.
Right.
And then we take a 5-10 minute break and allow them to set up, and then that'll be 10:30.
Yeah, because I don't want anyone to feel rushed.
that audit through our audit report. So we are going to move with permission of council to 11.3. The LED light conversion. And as it was brought forward at the public question comment session, this is for information only. There, we own Nova Scotia Power, as well as all the other municipalities will all be owing the money. And this was not a budgeted, we did not know this was coming, so this is not a budgeted item, but we have to pay it. And it's the amount of $36,843.70. And with one of our staff, just give a little bit further.
Yeah, I'll just explain the background, because many weren't on council at the time. So back 6 or 7 years ago, the premier of the day announced that we were going to convert all the streetlights in Nova Scotia to LED. And unfortunately, we weren't, in most of the streetlights in the province were owned by municipalities or paid for by municipalities, and we weren't consulted or didn't know anything about it. And so what happened at the time was all the streetlights were essentially, for the most part, were owned and operated by Nova Scotia Power. And after the announcement was made, they stood up and said, whoa, we have all these assets. We can't just throw them in the garbage because we're paying for them over a certain period of time with the lifespan of their time. So what happened was when the Nova Scotia Power went to the URB, who regulates Nova Scotia Power about lights, they determined that certain portion of their lights would still be useful as of the end of this year, when I think it's the end of this year or the end of 2022, and all the lights in Nova Scotia, all the public lights, I would say, are required to be converted to LED. The Nova Scotia Power's argument was they still have lights that were bought that still have 5 or 10 years life on them, and they still need to pay for them because they haven't amortized them or depreciated them all the way. So what they determined was that the government, or us as the streetlights, have to pay for that, what they call stranded asset. So at the end of the day, it's an asset that still has life, but it's stranded, it has nowhere to go. And so those municipalities that took over owning and operating all their streetlights don't pay this. So there are a few municipalities that said, we will own and maintain all of our streetlights going forward. They have staff they've hired, they have equipment and vehicles they've purchased, or they have a private sector contract. So they took over their streetlights immediately, so they don't have to pay this, but they've been paying the cost to upgrade and replace all that on their own through the streetlight cost. We did not do that. And so now they've just determined, this letter simply says the lights are now been all converted, so there shouldn't be any public streetlights anymore that aren't LED. So if you see any, let staff know. So now they've said they're all done. Now they want to reconcile the money and want their money, and the balance they've come up with is just under $37,000. And they've applied to the URB, which is a letter attached, which simply says that it was $37 million over $1.7 million over budget. The URB has given information to bill those applicable municipalities their applicable portion of that money, and ours came down to $36,000 and change is what we have to pay. So we're legally obliged to pay it, and unfortunately, it was just a decision of a former government that just said we're just going to convert everything to LED without thinking about the impacts, because the impacts are all municipal for the most part. There's very few streetlights that are owned by private sector or by provincial government or the federal government. I'd say probably 98% of them are municipally owned, and so the municipalities have to pay the difference. And so this is just for the public's knowledge that all the streetlights should now be converted. And the intention was that once they're all converted, then the municipality will then get a LED streetlight charge. As opposed to a halogen or the other types of the lights that are on there now. So we don't get it now, but beginning next fiscal year, I assume our street light budget should be significantly less because we're paying for LED. And so if you had Christmas lights on your tree before, you know, you had a big bill, and then when you went to LED, the bill was a lot less. And so we would expect beginning next fiscal year, our power bill should be much less for the street light cost for those.
May I just?
Yes.
Excuse me, if all of you look on page 5 of 10, under section 11, you'll see a line that says streetlights. That is where that will be, that cost will be posted next quarter. So when the percentage is up, you should all know why. There'll be a test.
How are we going to be
out? So we'll be over budget this year.
Yeah.
And unless they give us a credit in the next couple fiscal quarters, to reduce the LED light, which I expect they won't, but if they did, then it back down, but if it doesn't, next fiscal year, the budget for streetlights should be significantly less.
Okay, we will have a 8-minute recess. And be back.
Go again.
No mask, but stampede.
Okay, so before we begin, several weeks ago, and it might have been 3 weeks ago, we were electronically emailed a draft water utility study. And if any of you studied it as intently as Councilor Brown did, you realize that that draft was a draft and there's been some slight change between what you saw then and what you see today. But the premise is still basically the same. We have two people with us who have conducted the water study, Jerry Eisner in blue and Blaine Rooney. And I've spoken with them briefly. Blaine's going to start and they'll do their introductions. And they've got lots of experience in doing this. So we're all going to be educated at the end of this session. So before we begin, there is a motion. Yes.
No, it's later on.
It's later on. Okay, let's go.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. Thanks for inviting us this morning to present the water rate study. My name is Blaine Rooney, and my colleague Jerry Eisner. We do about the majority of these for the province, for the water utilities in the province. Water utilities in Nova Scotia are regulated by the Nova Scotia Utility Review Board through the Public Utilities Act. So they're the ones that set the rates. So we apply to set their rates. The council of this municipality is essentially the board of directors of the municipality of Queens Water Utility. So the process we do is we work with staff and we put together basically a three-year business plan, capital and operating, for the water utility. And then we submit that to the Nova Scotia, we submit it to the council, which is why we're here today. And if council agrees that it should go ahead, then we'll pass a motion and we'll file it with the utility review board. Just our background, my background, I'm a CPA, CA. I worked with Halifax Water for 27 years. The past 25 of it is Director of Finance and Customer Service. Jerry's background is, he's an engineer. He was a consulting engineer. Of the engineering companies and did a lot of work with municipalities. And we've been doing this, I've been doing it for 11 years after I mostly retired, and Jerry's been doing it longer than that. So we've been through this road before. We do some work in New Brunswick and PEI, but the vast majority of it is in Nova Scotia. So the process is that the board, as I said, once we submit this to the utility review board, they take control of the process and we lose it. And what'll happen generally is we'll get some information, they'll look at it, and we'll get a schedule of events, one of which will be they'll issue us somewhere between 30 and 50 information requests. So they'll pick apart this thing with weeds, and a lot of the questions, what comes out of it, so we'll have to respond to them. And they'll schedule a public hearing. Now, before COVID, they would come here. And I suspect they may come back here once this is over. The hearings we've had within the last year have all been done virtually. But the process is the same. You can have interveners and all that. You can respond, you can formally apply, and they'll have a public hearing, and then they'll issue a decision in due course. That whole process, from the time we file the application, usually takes about 6 months. So effectively, we're looking to get rates in this to begin on April 1st of next year, which is the start of your fiscal year. So I think that's all as much of an introduction, and I'll turn it over to Jerry to hit the highlights.
Okay, I'm doing water rate studies can put many people to sleep, including myself at times. What I will do is I'm gonna run through the water rate study and try to pick out the points that are most pertinent to setting the rates and why rates are set the way they are, so that you have an understanding of that. And to do that, I feel like you all have a copy of it, so I'm gonna refer to page numbers. Okay, it's your section 3.2, but I'm gonna refer to page numbers. And the very first page number I'm gonna refer you to is page 9. Blaine says that the hearing process is semi-judicial, so that some of it is process-driven, and we'll move for you to tears with that. We'll try to get down to the meat of it all. What this page does is, which we call worksheet B1, the board tells us what to call it, it indicates what will happen to the water utility if you do not change rates, okay? So it's not based on the new rates, it's based on your existing rates, okay? So there's a few things to realize what happened. One is that if you go down and go up four lines from the bottoms, you'll have what's called excess or deficiency in brackets of revenue over expenditures. And you can see that in the current year, looking at about a $21,000 deficit the current year that's going on, the 2021 year. But without a change in rates, that will grow to $91,000 next year, to $94,000 the year after, to $117,000 the year after that. So you can see that there's just reason for you to get in there and get your rates. Now, on that same page, at the three lines up from the bottom, you'll see that you're setting a rather a good surplus, okay? You've earned up some money, you've held it in an account. Some of it is due to be placed in a reserve account, which we're gonna apply for during this hearing process for the filter backwash at the water treatment plant. It's been built up over the years, about $180,000 that needs to be moved over to that account. Because those sorts of reserve accounts require board approval, and we didn't have it, so it's been just sitting there in the surplus account. And as well, you'll see that there's what's referred to in the economic world as a balloon payment, i.e. you have a loan payment coming due that the financing was for 10 years, and the balance is $245,604. And what we're going to do is take that out of your surplus account and not refinance that. So that cuts down on your capital debt, and also it'll leave you sitting in pretty good shape in your surplus account, or your surplus at year end, in much better shape than most utilities we work on, which all too often I'm looking at down there and I see negative signs all across the board. So that's just to give you an indication, but the most important thing on this page, and the thing that the board will be interested in, is that without a rate adjustment, you're going to lose some serious money coming up in the next 3 years, in the order of, $300,000. And, yes?
That comes that goes from, like, $21,000 to $91,000 in that one year.
You'll see that some of the expenditures we're planning are relating to, especially on account for what we call non-revenue water, which is water that's treated and not processed and not sold. It's leaked out of the system. It's either gone. Some of it we refer to as non-revenue. Some of it's accounted for. Like, we know that they flush hydrants, they flush mains. That's all accounted for. Then there's a whole series of it that's what we refer to as unaccounted for, which is basically leakage. And some of your pipe network, especially your transmission main coming in from the lake, is dating back to the 1890s, and let's just say that some of the joints are leaking. And I'm guessing, but I suspect there's a joint every 4 to 5 feet in that old pipe with lead open in it. And so to fix it would be a monumental task. So it's actually being replaced, and that's scheduled in here. So that's some of the expenditures that drive that price up. Okay.
Is there a well over there? That's part of the system too, isn't it?
The well is not part of the system.
It's not part
of the utility, no.
No, I guess not. That's just a straight well. That's right.
No, it is not considered part of the utility. It doesn't deliver water to any of your customers.
Okay.
On a fee basis. Okay, so that sets the stage as to why we're here. Okay. That's the first thing. Next thing I'm going to do is refer you to page 11, which is an answer to your question about where the expenses are going. We've worked extensively with Adam and Joanne, and Joanne and Adam have worked a lot in the background without us, getting some of your accounts, shall we say, more correctly it could have been, and we figured the board was going to question us extensively on it, so task was taken on, and what we've done is made the allocations, adjusted them to make them more more alignment with the actual expenditure centers. So the cost centers in some cases were perhaps under administration, they should have been under transmission and distribution, and so all those things have been adjusted and put back in order. And that's why you'll see some of the expense items, like even in first of all, source of supply, there was no money allocated to that. It was actually all carried somewhere else in the system. But there is a source of supply. You have a lake. You have a lake intake. You have screens. All those things have to be maintained. By the board's rules, if it's there and you're spending money on it, you should have a cost center for it. And so we're setting up a cost center with your staff. They're going to set one up to run source of supply. It's not a huge item. It's around $10,000 or $11,000 a year. But it will keep that out there in the forefront, and perhaps it makes it easier to manage from a management point of view. On this areas of water treatment, you'll see that the costs are increasing in some areas. Some of this was due to the reallocation of some of the labor, especially where labor was not necessarily allocated directly to the utility, but after a review, it was found that this is certainly in the case here, it's $35,000 for a couple of years, then it goes to 62. 62 in our minds is much more comparable to what we find in other utilities. Running water treatment plants of this size would be $60,000 to $80,000 a year in labor to do that. So this is, as I said, we consider this perhaps a more correct allocation. In general, across the board, what we've allocated and what we've included is about a 3% per year increase, and in the case of water treatment, it is 3% per year. That is, there's no magic in that number, except that the UARB has adopted that as being a reasonable thing. Now, when you set water rates, we set them at what we call zero budgeting, so we have no contingency fund anywhere. So if we say it's going to cost this much and it costs more, then we're in a deficit. So they give us a little leeway in a couple of spots, and one of them is the 3% rule. We call it inflationary, but inflation's been 1.5% to 2%. So we pick up a point, which is not a whole lot of money, but $3,000 in contingency is better than no contingency. And that's essentially what's going on with that. Now in the next one, transmission and distribution, there's a whole new item there. It's about five lines up from the bottom. It's called leak detection. This is starting a different program for you, and that is, we talked to the engineering staff, I explained to them that the UARB is very keen on looking at non-revenue water. And in your case right now, you're treating about twice as much water as you're selling. Okay? So you produce 100,000 cubic meters and you sell 50,000, or whatever the number is, but that's basically where you're at. Now some of that, we can account for. There's water being put out for what we call bleeders, which is to maintain the chlorine level. So we have long dead end pipes, and they don't consume enough water. So you have to let the water flow to keep the chlorine levels high enough to make sure it meets the public health standard. So that's a bleeder. They flush mains. We know that. We also know the fire department. We charge them for it. But if there's a fire or if they're practicing, they hook onto the hydrants and they use water. That's all accounted for. What's unaccounted for is the leakage, and since yours is rather, it's in the higher end of the scale in the province. It's normally for a utility this age, it'd probably be 20 to 25 to maybe even 30% of unaccounted for, but right now you're at close to 50 to 60%. So we're putting in a new little program called leak detection, which is starts out with someone coming in and doing a really detailed listen. Believe it or not, they do it acoustically, and they listen for leaks, and a good leak detection guy is, I tell them about, they're like violin players, they can tell you how big the leak is and approximately where it's at. So they will listen through, that's the first year, and then in the what you'll see in years two and three is like a maintenance program. You have that same person come back, you fix the leaks, they come back and they check, and they say, okay, that's fine, you fix those, but guess what, you've got a new one over here. Because this never stops. It's like the laundry. You can do it all you want, and next year you'll have more leaks. Okay? Because it's pipelines in the street. There's heavy trucks on the road. Pipes are old. They're failing, there's a rock playing on them that shouldn't be there, there's a whole number of things. Anyway, so that's one of the reasons why your expenses are going up, is some of that reallocation or correcting the allocation of labor, and the other one certainly in this case, it's a direct cost of $25,000 that first year. So that one, it goes up actually 8% in the first year, it goes down 2% in the second year because of that little bump in there, and then about 4, and then finally admin in general, and again here, this is one where, you know, Joanna's looked at the allocations of staff internally, how much time has to spend doing water billings and collecting information, getting out accounts and collecting it all back and that sort of thing. And we've come up with budgets, and these are in the 3% per year range, each one of them. So that's the breakdown of all of those expenses that were used, and we're now going to use those expenses to generate our rates. Now, on top of that, that's all operating, we have capital, and that happens on page 13, 14, 15, and 16. And what we do is we simply take the capital program that staff have brought forward, and we insert it into these tables, and as we do that, we calculate A, how we're going to pay for it, and B, what the depreciation is on that asset that we have to add to our depreciation fund, amortization fund that we're collecting to replace the system. So in the case of the very first page, page 13, this expenditures is $355,100 at the middle of the page there. There's, at the CIS at the bottom, there's $89,100 either from outside funding, it's either CWWF or gas tax. And the balance of it, we're going to take out of your depreciation fund. You currently have about $1,059,000 sitting in your depreciation fund that you've accumulated over the years. It was put in for the intention of doing and repairing and replacing things. And so, as you'll see in that calculation, we're saying at the end of the year, the end of that year, we're predicting you'll have about $913,000 in that depreciation fund. And we do that same thing for each year. The next page is 22, 23, 23, 24, and if you go to page 16, it's 24, 25, and you'll see that we put in a fair bit of money, $250,000 a year on the transmission main. That's to attack some of this leaking problem that we know we're going to find. And the old transmission main, if we get it replaced and get new tighter piping in there. And you'll also see that we're spending some depreciation each year. We're putting more in every year, of course, but we spend it. And so you'll end up, we're thinking with a depreciation fund in the order of $500,000 at the end of your three-year term, which is still a very healthy depreciation fund. Some utilities actually run on the principle that they will keep very little there. They just simply keep spending it because there's so many pipes in the ground in Nova Scotia that require replacement. Most of our systems are old. Okay, they're older towns, older communities. There's always more demand than there is money, for the simple terms. Okay, so, but we've gone through all three of these years without any borrowing, and you're spending 350 in that range, 350, 375 each year on replacing pipes without any borrowing, meaning borrowing in your water utility. So that all gets added in, the depreciation gets added in, we look at that. The next thing we do, after we've done all that, now we figure out how much things are gonna cost, we go to page 21, and the water utility sells literally to the municipality fire protection services, because a water utility under the Public Utilities Act is to deliver water to customers, it's not to fight fires. So the very first thing we have to do is calculate how much the fire department or the municipality, in this case, not the fire department, the municipality owes the water utility to provide that service. And if you think of it, a reservoir in most systems, about a third of a reservoir's general knowledge, not specific to your location, but about a third of a reservoir's capacity is actually to provide water to customers, and two-thirds is to fight fires, okay? Because when a customer opens the tap or flushes the toilet, not much water flows. When the fire department hooks on, it's big time, okay? So that's the rough rule, the old engineering rule, if I had to guess it, and I'm 70, my days gone by, I'd say, oh, okay, a third, maybe 40% at most, that sort of thing. So what we do is we take all of the utility plant and service, again, this is board directed, each asset, and we allocate them either to fire protection or to what we call general service or delivery of water to the customers. And I tell everybody there's two extremes, and one is a water meter, which when you have a fire is really useless. So it goes 100% to delivery of water and nothing to the customer, or to 100% yeah, to the customer and nothing to the fire protection. And the opposite end of the scale is a hydrant, which really does nothing to deliver water to a house, but it does a great deal to fight fire. So it goes 100% to fire protection, 0% to residential. Most everything else falls 90% to general service or delivery of water and 10% to fire, because even when the fire is on, the water treatment plant does contribute some. It's still making water, still sending it into the system. But you'll find that the key items in here are reservoirs and transmission piping, street piping. They actually go 40% to delivering water to a customer and 60% to fire. Because in general, that's the sizing of how the sizing of those pipes happen. A 10-inch pipe in the street is usually never required for delivery to customers. It's there to simply deliver a lot of water to a fire, especially in a downtown area. So we do all those allocations, and we arrive at percentages, a mixed percentage from all of the assets that the utility has. We do that for each year. That's pages 21 through 22, 23. We take those percentages, and we insert them into our expense tables that we generated by going through all the accounts. And we do that on page 25. And we take source of supply, 10%, again, to fighting fires, because it's there, it's going to generate something. Same with water treatment, 10%. Transmission and distribution, we use our calculated amount, which in your case is 41.7, and so on. Now, we have done a little bit of footwork here that the board allows us to do. Your existing fire protection rate is $197,235. If I follow the formula exactly in the first year, the fire protection rate would be 187, increasing the second year and going up to 195,474. What we're asking the board to do, because it still offers the municipality a good rate, we're asking them to allow you to set the fire protection rate at the rate that's calculated for the third year, for the first 2 years. So that has the effect of lowering the amount of money we need to get from the customer directly. It also, you know, in our mind, the 187 to 195 is not a huge hit on the municipality, and you're going to lower it down back up to 195 anyway. So we'll ask them to do this. We've done this in a number of other utilities. They've always been in agreement with it, that it's a good way to go about it. And it does impact, it, like I said, what it does is it reduces the impact on our rates for customers in that first year. So in essence, what we're asking for them on this table is that we set the rates at 195,474 for each of the 3 years. And we follow the formula only for the third year. It's the one that's only really based on the formula. The other one, I did some magic math on and came up with a formula that worked. My friends at Excel. So that's what we're asking. That's one thing we're asking them to do. And like I said, the reasoning is that it's for setting up the rates for the customers to get them as low as we can. The next table I'll send you to is page 27. On it, what we do is we allocate expenses, the required expenses. First, we take the total revenue that we got from our first page, which is all of those things we calculated, plus our depreciation, plus a budget amount for taxes, a budget amount for depreciation, and we put that in a formula and we say, okay, how much of this can we get from base? We have some pretty strict guidelines from the board. We can ask them to bend them a bit. What we're asking them to do in your case is to set your base rate at around 40% of your total revenue. So the reason we do that is a financial security thing, because it may fall lower than that. You're a small utility. If you lost one big customer, customer lost some big sales, you could lose some money in a hurry. So we try to keep the base which you get paid regardless of whether the customer uses water or not at some reasonable level. Sometimes a really small utility will set it at closer to 50 to 55%. In your case, we think 40 is good given your customer base. So we're asking the board to do that at 40%, which means that 60% of the revenue that you'll get comes from selling water. So if water sales go up, you're okay. If water sales go down, not so okay. But you do have a little bit of surplus account here, so you can stand a little bump around. But we didn't see anything that caused us to think that you were going to lose water sales. We just try to build a little bit of defense in there in case something strange happens. So that's how we divvy up the revenue required from base and that. Then what we start with on page 28 is all the customers you have. You have two unmetered services, 1,159 5/8-inch customers, and so on down the list for a total of 1,225 customers right now. For anyone's interest sake, you had 1,138 in 2002. So you've come up 87 customers since that time. We are not adding in any growth into this projection this time around. The reason for that is that we add growth in, it's built into the formula that it'll automatically generate revenue. And if you don't get growth, then you're going to end up shorter of money. It's basically the bottom line. And we talked to staff, there was nothing that they saw on the horizon that was absolutely certain that we were going to have four new units this year or next year or the year after. And we impressed upon it, but Wayne being the accountant, especially that be absolutely certain that we're going to have that revenue, because we're going to count it as revenue if you put growth in here. And if you build it in and you don't get it, then you just end up in a deficit position. So there's that, that we do that for every year. Needless to say, in this case, it doesn't change much. Then we use a formula to generate the base rates. And in that's on page 30, we use a thing called the capacity ratio. It is an organization that is the father of all rules in the water business. It's the American Water Works Association, AWWA, for those that are in the acronym world. But they generate and do testing on many things. One of them is they check the capacity of every meter versus a 5/8 inch meter. So the rule is you take 5/8 as being one, and you say, okay, how much more water can I put through a 4-inch meter than I can put through a 5/8? And the testing indicates it's 25 times as much water. So when we set base rates under the utilities system, we set the base rates to reflect mostly, not totally, but mostly your ability to take water. It's very similar to electrical power, where if you have a 100-amp service coming into your home, you pay a base rate. If you have a 500-amp service or a 1,000-amp service, you're running a business, you'll pay a much higher base rate because you have the ability to take more out of the system, so therefore the system has to be built to do that. So, and that's exactly how water rates are set. So you'll find that a four-inch customer charge is, you know, basically $3,785 a year, and a 5/8 inch or a standard household meter is $157 a year. And that's the reason why they're different, is because of that capacity. They have the capacity to take more water. So we do that for each meter, and we generate a meter rate. We then take the look at how much water you've sold in the last years. In your case, you sold 290,626 cubic meters, and most of that went to your 5/8 inch, your residential meters. I do a check every time to see whether or not your residential customers are reducing their consumption, because we are seeing that in some areas. Some of that is aging population. In other words, there's not as many people living in the home. In other cases, it's driven by more efficient water devices, water using devices, low-cost toilets, front-loading washers, and things like that, are really dramatically. In your case, the interesting thing was in 2002, you used 150 cubic meters per customer per year, and this last year you used 149 cubic meters per customer per year. So we didn't build any decline into your consumption. We're leaving it set as it is because we have no evidence to suggest it should be going down. water rates in, hopefully it holds up, but they hold there at the current level. I believe it will, because I don't think we're seeing a dramatic change in rates. So that's there, that's how much water we're selling each year. Remember, we divided up how much money we needed from base, how much we needed from water sales. Water sales, we just simply do, you know, how much money we need and how much water we're selling, and it comes out at $1.21 per cubic meter. The current rate is 96 cents per cubic meter. And that changes in year two to $1.24, this is page 32, and then goes to $1.28 in the final year. So those are the calculated consumption rates. All of that gets carried forward, and I'll do that. On page 35, we were asked by engineering staff, we're planning on building a wholesale meter for truckers to load up water. So we've calculated a rate on page 35 for the sale of bulk water sales, which is, again, a formula from the board. So it basically raises the price up from that $1.21, because it includes everything, the metering, the setting up of the facility and everything else. It goes up to more like 360, 375 cubic meter for those that service to provide that necessary infrastructure and that service. The table that most councils are most interested in is page 36. It is a comparison of the average bill, okay? So to get an average bill, we just take the total number of customers, divide it into how much water was used by that customer class, back to those two tables where we had the 157,000, whatever it was, cubic meters for the residential customers, we divide by the number of customers, and we end up at around 37 cubic meters. And to do that, that sees your first year change of about 12.8%. Now, that's getting up there, but the fact of the matter is, your last rate adjustment was April 1st, 2004. Okay, so you've got a few years under the belt. I'm amazed, to be honest with you, that it came out that low. I really was when I was through it. It speaks well for how well the treatment system and things are running, because I really thought you were going to be hit with a doozy, to be honest. Not that I was looking forward to that, because that's always, the board always has a rougher time with those. Anyway, that's the first year. You go to the second part of the table, you see that the rate increase is very modest. It's 0.4% for the residential customers. And in the following years, it's 3.9% for the residential customers. Now, some of that in the first and second years is because we changed that fire protection rate, so we pulled those rates down a bit. And then we have to catch up in that final year. It all comes back to, eventually it has to be, we have to catch up sooner somewhere, so we do it in the third test year. But overall, you're seeing increases on a quarterly basis of about $9.60 the first year, which is in the range of $3.20 a month, which is incredibly low for a product that you have delivered to your house under pressure, treated or tested to meet government standards. So we looked at that. I'll let that one go by. And next, what we did is we looked at all of your schedules, schedule of rates and charges, which is, we'll start with on page 41. Primarily what we did here is we discussed these with staff, and obviously they were written in 2002. Costs have changed a bit. So we have adjusted all of the cost figures in them to reflect what's considered normal in the industry, and certainly it appears to be that your staff and your agreements with staff about charging time after hours and things like that is similar to others. But basically, the car charge rates are going from, for water supplied from hydrants, it was $25. That includes sending the man out and doing it, and so that's up to $70. That's, again, more than the provincial average. And for other charges, it's basically $60 for call-outs on regular hours and $200 for after hours. Now, most utilities don't get any call-outs for after hours once they implement a charge that's actually reflective of what it costs, because most areas on a Sunday night or a holiday, you have to pay your staff for a minimum number of hours if they service. So we've done that for all of the charges through the system. We have put in a, what we call a May charge for missed appointments by customers. It didn't appear to be a major problem here, but it's certainly very common one in the province. And that is that if someone's just chronically phones up and keeps saying, well, this is wrong, that's wrong, we can go check, we just say you may charge them up to $50 if you feel that the if you feel that the calls are really driven by something other than the water system. The last thing we have there, is, which is page 43, is the bulk water rate. So it was $3.63 for that was a minimum charge of $50. Now the minimum charge is quite common in most areas. In areas where we haven't had it, we've had some I wouldn't say bad experiences, still bad experiences. We've had people show up with like 2 gallon jugs and turn the spigot on. The thing is geared to send out a lot of water in a hurry, and it really hasn't turned out well. Jugs all over the yard and people chasing them. This is really meant for bulk water hauls. It's not meant for people going out to get a gallon of water. Okay, so it's a bulk water station. It's going to have a bulk water meter set up on it. It's going to deliver a lot of water in a hurry. It's not meant for someone showing up with 2 5-gallon totes and saying, I need 10 gallons of water. So the minimum charge is placed in for that reason, to try to push it to the truckers away from the residential users. If someone wants residential water, they maybe should consider going over to Sobeys or Superstore or something who will refill your bottle. So that was done. We do that for each year. Your 3 years of your rate study is planning system, the 3-year business plan. So we set rates, which we talked about how they were set. We do that for each year. And we end up with schedule what we call A, B, and C. And then we end up with schedule B, which is page 51. In this case here, it's fair to say that your schedule D, the rules and regulations of the utility, were significantly out of date with what the current board is requesting that we include and seeks for every utility to have some minimum sets of rules on. So we've made a lot of adjustments, more than I can go through in any one time, but all of them are based on the just bringing the water utility up to the current expectations of the public utilities board review of what they expect. Now, some of them you may think are not necessary, but we put them all in. If you don't use them, there's no harm. If it shows up that someone does do something that is, I'm supposed to say, really dumb, and that's probably true, because that's what we get occasionally, then the rules are there for you to help you adjust that situation. And it gives staff, certainly your engineering staff, your CAO staff, it gives them the tools to be able to adjudicate these things under rules that are authorized and enforced under the Public Utilities Act. So we did add a couple of new ones at the end. We just simply request for extensions. I don't believe it was there. We just simply said the utility has no obligation to extend water service. You have to realize that. You don't have to extend water service, but you will review every request for an extension individually and you'll make a decision accordingly. So the other one is work on utility infrastructure is restricted to utility staff and not some guy with the thinking he can just dig it up and start doing things. It's yours. The other thing is the curb stop, the little round disc that's in your front lawn in most places. We find that people, this is chronic everywhere in the province, people bury them, they put flower gardens on top of them, they pave their driveway on top of them, put concrete sidewalks on top of them. The rule is that little curb stop belongs to you because it's on public property. And it's your way to turn the water on and off. And if they do all those things, then you have to dig it up, and Buddy has to pay the freight and the extra costs that he did by putting things there, and you can't necessarily put them all back. I'll go pave the driveway again on top. It's exposed to the air for a reason, because you want to have access to it. Anyway, those are sort of the highlights of setting
comments to what Jerry said. The first year, you know, there's a probably a 12% increase in why that is. If you go back to the first page that Jerry looked at, page 9, where it says basically if we don't lose rates, we're gonna lose $91,000 this extra fiscal year. The way the Public Act works, that's a hole, and we have to crawl out of the hole in the first year. So you have to generate $91,000 more on $700,000 worth of revenue. So that's more than 10%. So that's why that adjustment is as big as it is the first year. You have to crawl out of the hole. And that's why we talk to a lot of utilities about don't, you know, when you see yourself go into deficit, then it's the right, because you know, the old fellow saying is the first thing you should do when you're in a hole is stop digging. So you have to crawl out of that hole. So that's the reason, the main reason why the big increase for ship. The second point I'd just like to just reiterate, when Jerry was talking about the difference between the base and the consumption rate, what we're trying to do is have that delicate balance of trying to make sure the utility is protected. So the 40% of your revenue you're gonna get if you're hooked up. Having spent a lot of years in the utility business, there's very few expenses that are variable in the water utility. I mean, sales drop 10%, maybe use less chemicals and a little less power, but you're still gonna have the staff and you're still gonna have all the equipment. But by having the 60% of the rate structure based on consumption, customers can influence their bill. So if they reduce their water use, their bill will go down, no question. So that's try to get that balance in there that protects the utility, but also allows customers to influence their bill.
The last thing I'll draw your attention to is the little handout that arrived this morning, which is comparison your rates with everybody else in the province based on your consumption. Mm-hmm. And you are in excellent shape. I don't know how else to tell you. I mean, you're like 7th, 8th, on the 9th on the list up there as far as the cost. And this is based on your water consumption, the 37 cubic meters that we talked about. So it's everybody else has been adjusted to use 37 cubic meters on this table. And if you go down at the bottom of the page, you see Mahone Bay and Victoria County, both in the $250 a quarter range for water. You're at in the $80 range. Okay, so you're in, even with your increase, mm-hmm. you still have very, very good rates. Okay, so I would not be afraid if I were you to say to anyone, you know, we do have some of the best rates in the province. You certainly do. At the bottom, I took the median. So the median is half above, half below you is $119.95, so $120. And the average or the mean is $129.50 right now. Mm-hmm. So you're well below average, you're well below the median. And I figured you should have that in your back pocket if someone says we're paying too much. You actually get pretty good rates for surface water supplies.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. The first four of the first five water utilities there all have groundwater. Yeah. Groundwater's apparently cheaper to treat because you just generally have to chlorinate it, where you don't have to have a big expensive treatment plant. And Digby has the luxury of at least a couple of fish plants, I think,
yeah.
who are usually big water users.
Anyway, that's it.
So that chart that you just handed out lists the $1.14 as the price instead of the $1.21.
Oh, okay.
So that
number should be $83.27. Is what that should be, but it still leaves you. Yeah. You're going to lose one position.
One position.
Not as stellar for talking to us about raising the rates. It should be $84.67. You're right.
Yeah.
I had troubles with that table right in the beginning. <of summer. laughs>
That was one of the other things that I noticed, that most of the people that are below us in price
yeah.
are probably due for another rate increase.
Yeah, Stellarton is due. Their rate was set in 2008. They're talking to us right now.
Yeah.
Certainly Amherst is talking to us right now. We're doing theirs. We're doing a review there. Fenton has called us and said they're going to let us know, but I think they had some staff changes. None of the others, but certainly in Richmond County are talking.
Yeah.
No, it's always in motion.
Yeah.
And, but the fact that you're in the, what I call the lower quartile, you're in good company. You know, if it's $80 or $85, you're still in what I call great company.
Good shape.
It always amazes me on water rates or sewer rates would be the same. If you look at the, compare them to internet rates, and you look at the infrastructure that the water and sewer utility needs, and you look at the infrastructure that the internet needs, compare the two of them, not even close.
No.
Do you think we should raise our rates?
I think if you don't raise your rates, you're gonna run yourself into a deficit, and then when we're back here, it's gonna be like 35%.
No, I'm talking about the internet rate.
Oh, yeah, oh, well.
Oh, no, we've had this battle more than once where people tell us they're paying too much, and we, you know, you pay more for cable TV and your cell phone than you do for water. I mean, you buy, especially cell phones, you buy them by the month. This is the quarter, okay, this is 3 months.
Yeah.
So there's a dramatic difference between people pop, you know, $75 or $100 a month for cell phone. That's $300.
So it's very important that anyone who has any questions, ask them, ask for clarification, because you will be asked about why the water rates are going up, especially if you have any of your constituents that are on water rates. So just as a, see if I've got this right, correct. So our expenses are going up because we're reallocating labor that was never charged the utility,
right,
but is actual utility labor.
Right.
So we're now putting in the labor that belongs to the utility. The direct cost for the leak detection. So that's $25,000 and then $10,000. So there's a $25,000 increase coming up because we're losing, where did I put this?
Half our water.
About half our water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're losing through leaks.
And because you're gonna spend some capital money on that, your depreciation's gonna go up. And that's a good thing because it means you'll be able to reinvest a little bit more.
Yeah, and then we've also added in like source of supply.
Right.
Which was never ever there before.
Yeah.
But has to be added in as an expense.
I think there's been a reallocation of costs among departments, but there's also been a realization that perhaps not the water utility was, the municipality was charging all of the appropriate cost to the water utility. And there's been some movement to do that. And the board supports that. The board wants the cost of, it should be the cost. It shouldn't be it shouldn't be supported by the taxpayers, basically. You shouldn't pay for the water as it is.
Right, because all the utility users should be paying for all this rather than some of these costs which were spread out through, say, the engineering department in other ways. And our base rate's 40%, consumption rate is 60%, so therefore, if a customer feels pinched, they can always try to reduce their consumption rate.
They can, yeah.
And our consumption rate has only decreased 1% since 2002. You said something about.
Oh, yeah, so the total, your average consumption per
customer,
per residential
right.
customer. Has virtually not changed.
Since 2002. So
yeah.
despite
yeah.
everything,
the last number I had
may have gone back down again, but right now it's about
the average
3 years.
Yeah,
yeah.
yeah.
Right.
About 150 cubic meters a year.
And what else will people want to ask?
So this increase will add approximately $9.60 quarterly on their bill.
Yes, in the first year.
In the first year.
And then it will decrease.
And then it actually, yeah, then it actually goes, I did all those calculations for it. I mean, just give me a second here.
Jermaine, it's up.
It goes up 30 cents the second year, and then it goes up $3.34 in the final year.
And those numbers are right.
Yeah, that's the numbers right out of that table on page 36. I just subtracted some off the other.
When you think of it, I mean,
everybody asks me what they are.
Part of the reason that in the second and third year, their expenses, you know, we budgeted actually up for, except for cases we know there's different, we've got a 3% increase. But if there's no increase in customer numbers, we haven't put in, or no increase in consumption, that's flat. So rates would have to go up to 3%. You get a little bit of a kick in the help in the second year because we're going to pay off that loan with the operating surplus we have. And so your debt payments will drop somewhat. So there's still some.
The program goes down $15,000 year one, year two.
And then we're going to use the monies in that other fund to help as we upgrade our transmission line,
that's
we're going to use that $1 million plus that water utility users actually paid.
Right.
So it's their money. We're not taking money from the general taxpayer.
No.
That's their money. That's
money
sitting.
The customers have put in the system.
Yeah, the depreciation number is part of your rate structure, and it's made exactly for that use. Because of the cost difference between when that was put in 40 years ago and now, it'll never be enough, but it'll help. It certainly helps. When I worked for Halifax Water,
it's water money.
We had $2 or $3 million worth of depreciation every year. We spent every cent of it because we have an old, Halifax has an old system. It's always in need of repair. And as Gary said, it's like doing the laundry. It'll never be done. If you ever finished it, it would be time to start again.
You fix all the leaks this year, there'll be some new ones next year. Don't worry.
Yeah.
You won't be able to work.
Director Vino, do you have a question?
Yeah, well, it's not a question. It was just
comment.
Something else that I will add. We're also putting in a comprehensive meter replacement program.
Yeah.
So if you look on page 11, if you go down to the maintenance of meters, you'll see that we spend $3,900, $5,200, but then we go up to $26,000, $29,031. Director of Engineering Public Works and I were having a conversation, and he said that a lot of our meters are very old and we need to be proactive and start replacing them. I believe we were going to do 60 a year. I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but we wanted to build that in so that, you know, we're trying to be proactive here rather than reactive. And by putting that in place now over the 3 years, we certainly won't get them all done in the 3 years, but it kind of lightens the load. If they all go in an 18-month period, then we're looking at huge expense. So this way, at least we're preparing, and we're being proactive, and we're building it into the new rates.
That's an excellent point. Thanks for reminding us of that. Meters, water meters don't speed up as they get older. They slow down. They don't measure all the consumption that they're going through them. So that could be, you know, if you replaced all the meters, you're going to get more accurate consumption, and it could be part of the water loss part. Right?
Yeah.
They should. They're like any other utility asset. They only last for so long.
Yeah.
And so they should be replaced on on a systematic basis.
The old rule is 20 years. And that's it. 20 years old meters should take note and either recalibrate and clean, put back, which you can do to a larger one, but the smaller ones, the 5/8 inch.
When would any of our meters have been replaced? Have it?
A few odds and ends, I think, but as a rule, no. So they're very old, is what
so
I understand.
Seen
from
20 years.
Yeah. So this is another part of being proactive, and you know, by doing it now, we're building into the rate. We're building it into the new rate, so we'll be prepared. And I knew for us, it's about knowing that we've taken every step we can to prevent some horrible reactive measure in the future. And I mean, I'm pretty sure that we're not going to be waiting another 20 years before we revisit this. We'll know in the end of 3 years when we have really tight expenses and revenues that where we are to go back and revisit if this, you know, if we need adjusting.
Yeah. Our rule is generally you get 4 years out of a rate study. Try to be as accurate as we can working with staff, and 4 years means that the last year, which is the year that we did the budgeting for year three.
Councilor Fancy, you had a question?
Yes, very good report. I enjoyed it. It's nice to look at this and understand it all. One concern is, which is probably not a concern, but is if are we built in for growth with our transmission lines? say if all of a sudden we got a bunch of apartment buildings in and things like this, because our aging population, and that you start building this with our transmission lines, are we set up to be able to accommodate for all the, for a large growth?
I don't know your system off by heart, but I would suggest is the reservoirs here in the town?
Just by the treatment plant itself.
Okay.
Yes.
I really can't answer, but I suspect that there's adequate capacity, and if it's a large diameter, it's large enough to fight the fire protection, you'll have enough water to deliver to apartments and things. Okay, because again, back to the, remember the pipe is sized, if the reservoirs are big there, it's going through the transmission line, the pipe is sized to handle that fire flow, which is 60% of it, so there's more than room in there to put residential customers more flexible.
And the other part of that too is if you are able to reduce your water loss, that means there's more water to sell.
Absolutely, yeah.
As long as wherever those apartments are built where the utility runs.
Yes.
Because if they choose
That's right.
to like build out there, well then, no,
right.
because we don't have any transmission lines.
That's right.
But as long as they build where a transmission line runs.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest that we can be just based on
okay.
my brain's working here as an engineer now, and I'm saying if you can deliver the water to fight the fire, you can deliver the consumption water.
Okay.
Yeah.
If I may, Norman, just if everybody refers to page 13 for a second, I just want to clarify, make sure everybody understands exactly what's being proposed here. Bottom chart on the bottom right hand side shows depreciation fund balance beginning of the year $1,059,892 in my glasses. But anyway, it's
$892.
So $1,059,000, then each year there's some interest that accrues and it stays in that account. And then on the left side it shows we're going to do a project next year, or we're doing a project this year, which is the Roy Turner Drive, extending that line. So that money comes out, and then the contribution during the year. Each year we're required as part of the rates, and the rate amounts, you'll see money going into the depreciation.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the year, of the end of this year, that reserve, that depreciation fund will be down to $913,000. If you go to the next page, the depreciation is going to go down to $747,000. And if you go to page 15, it's going to go down to $623,000.
Yes.
And then on the last page, it's going to go down to the page 16, it's going to get down to 500,000.
Mm-hmm.
So we're able to keep the rates stable because what we're doing is the people who have contributed to the rates today have built up a depreciation reserve, and as Blaine said, it's for replacing capital assets. And so the proposal is we're going to take about $600,000 out of that to pay for some of those capital upgrades rather than borrow and pay principal and interest payments, which then affect the rate. Okay? But the offset is we're going to take people's money who contributed to it, and we're going to spend it the next couple of years. So we're going to decrease that reserve by about $600,000, which will show on our financial statements. But as the consultants have told us, the board frowns upon us building up reserves too big without a specific purpose for it. And so we're going to, the proposal is that's what we need to do, and that will keep the rates lower, because if we don't, then all that money, all those capital projects for the next few phases of building in that redundant line on Roy Turner Road, we're going to have to borrow for it.
Mm-hmm.
And if we don't get some of this cost-sharing money as it's proposed, then that impacts it as well. So we need to, so that's part of the reason why we're keeping the rates low, okay? But just so you're aware, we are going to take those $600,000 we're proposed to, if council agrees, out of that depreciation reserve over the next 4 years, 3 years, 4 years, in order to help pay the capital costs. We don't have to increase the rates by borrowing money and paying interest charges. The other part is on page 9. You'll see at the bottom of column 2, it shows we have an accumulated surplus of $599,155. Okay, or that's what we're projecting. So that's at the end of each year, if we have a surplus in the operating, and that goes into that account. And then if we have a deficit, that's how we pay for it. It doesn't go into the tax rate. We actually pay for that deficit from that surplus that's there, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've also suggested is next year, year or this year, the balloon payment?
Next year.
Next year, the balloon payment, which is showing, on line, the, next to it on line, or column three at the bottom there, 245,000. So we borrowed for the water utility for 15 years, or probably, no, we probably borrowed for 20 years. But you can only borrow for 15 years at a time.
Correct.
So in year 15, which will be this, the end of this year, we have a balloon payment, or we have an amount outstanding of 245,000. Normally you would go borrow again for another 5 years to pay it. But what we're suggesting is rather go borrow and pay principal and interest payments over the next 5 years, is we're gonna take that $599,000, and we're just gonna pay off the 245,000, get it done. Okay, so it's gonna have less surplus, we'll have about, what's that, 260,000 or whatever left in surplus, so we'll have a little bit there. So if we need some extra money, we have it there. We'll also have $500,000 in depreciation, so we'll still have some money there. So we're not emptying the bank, but we are significantly decreasing our cash. By about, over the next few years, about $750,000. But it's the users of the system who have created the cash, and we're simply just giving them their money back now to pay for the improvements and pay for the costs, rather than increase the rates and keep the money in the bank longer. Okay, so I just want everybody to be aware of that. So when the financial statements over the next couple of years, you'll see that we're decreasing that cash by about $750,000 in those couple different funds. Yeah, and that's how we're keeping the rates stable. Because otherwise, if we didn't do that, we'd be borrowing for the for that next year, which is gonna be a new principal payment, new interest, and as well for that depreciation fund for all the projects we're doing on that Roy Turner Drive. We'd be borrowing and paying principal and interest, and that would affect the rates, because that's a new expense every year. So in order to do that, we're simply taking some of the cash we have now and paying our bills up front.
And Roy Turner Drive is the main line that comes from a water treatment plant that comes down and feeds Liverpool. And that's 18, how old is that? 1890 something. So that's the line that's literally needs to be done, because that feeds everybody, Liverpool and Brooklyn. And that's an expense of $250,000 or so a year, working on that. Deputy Mayor Muse, did I see your hand, or was it?
Mine. So over 4 years, we're taking the capital reserve down from about $1 million to 500,000. If we continue on that way, that capital reserve will disappear. Like if
I wouldn't advise that.
No.
What I would see in the future, the next rate study is you'd probably look at using some of that, because you're contributing over $100,000 a year to it. You might use some of it, but I would look at stabilizing the rates by borrowing, perhaps not equally each year, but borrowing some each year and trying to get the rates as even. What our objective is, and what the board tells us they'd like, is if we can keep the rates, the change per year, equal. They're happier with this.
Yeah.
They're happier. Their feedback they get is happier. So if we can make it 5% a year or 4% a year, then that's what they want, as opposed to 112 and 20s.
Yeah. So that's what I was wondering. If the next time we do a rate study, if we'll have to.
Leveling out. I just think that it's our thought, that based on the hearings that we've done, is that you're carrying way more reserve than a utility this size needed. Our first question was, do you have a big expenditure coming up? So do you have to replace a reservoir? Do you have to replace a water treatment plant or something? Are you saving it for a big job? And the answer was, no, we're not. So then our suggestion back was, well, you really should spend it. You can stabilize your rates. You get 3 more years out of it. Then you'll sooner or later, you will have to borrow something. Because
right.
You just don't generate enough cash to maintain the system.
Okay, that answers that.
Did you have a further question, Councilor
Fancy? Yeah, this, I don't know if it's relevant or not, but it's when we bring the water along, do we bring sewer along with it to do it at the same time, because we're digging up the ground?
If I may, Mayor Garber, depends on where we're doing it at.
Yeah.
So, but 99% of the time, we do water and sewer at the same time.
Yes.
But the water portion gets allocated to the water utility.
That's right.
The sewer portion gets allocated to the sewer utility.
Yeah. No.
In the past, there's been some cross-contamination, which
that's
have...
Right.
Poor choice of words.
Which have made the budgets
right.
Not necessarily accurate, and so that's why we're correcting all that now.
Yep. I knew it wasn't relevant to what we were doing, but it just If I don't ask it now, I'll forget it.
Cross pollination, maybe. But sometimes some of the sewer costs have floated into the water, and some of the water has floated into the sewer. And so then it doesn't necessarily accurately reflect the actual cost of the systems.
Any other questions of Blaine and Jerry while we have them here? Chris and Joanne are very adept on this.
Not me.
Not Joanne.
Ms. Vino and Mr. Grant.
Ms. Vino and Mr. Grant. You know, I wonder if we should do it.
Something.
Cheat up the notes.
We will. We'll eventually issue a press release of some sorts of information to the public about what the impacts are going to be. The fact that the public will have the opportunity when there is a rate hearing set, probably later this fall, early winter, that the public will have the opportunity to provide written submissions or appear before the committee and make comments if they wish to.
The board will make you publish, the board will request that you publish it in the newspaper. They'll make up the ad. They'll tell you where they want it published.
And the other thing is that, you know, our suggestion in today's world is we always say make a paper copy available at the front desk and put it on your web page. As soon as the board has it and they've declared a hearing date, you say put it out there, get it out and let people look at it. The board has rules and regulations which they publish. If you want to, you can write them, explain if you have a difficulty, if one of your constituents wants to write them. That's one way. The other way is you can ask to appear. You have to ask at least 24 hours, I believe, or 36 hours before the hearing. So people don't walk in and have a free-for-all. But you can ask to appear. No one's ever turned down. Okay, so you can ask to appear and ask questions in order to make a statement. If you want to ask questions, you have to register as what's called an intervener. But again, it's easy to do. You just simply write them and say, I'd like to register as an intervener. And at that point in time, you can come as a member of the public and ask questions at the hearing. And you'll get all the information. You have the right to ask questions to the utility before the hearing, written questions. You can send them written questions. You can say, hey, I think the problem with this, I think something wrong here. Occasionally we get that, but most times people really will send in emails. Sometimes you get letters, and occasionally someone will show up and say, I want to speak. To be honest with you, it's generally when we're raising rates like 35% of people are showing up. And it's not pleasant for us, it's not pleasant for them, and we know that. It's not pleasant for the board either. No one wants to do that. You don't want to let your rates go, but you're in deficit year after year. And as Blaine says, the first thing you have to do is get out of the hole, and that's usually 20 or 30%. So you've kept this one in time, you've got a very small deficit this year. Up in the speeds there at the 12% and the $9.
So probably had all of the correct expenditures been listed where they should have been, there would have been a slight deficit probably last year.
Who knows? We may have been here a couple of years earlier.
Let's move to 10.0.